Next week, I'm starting a preaching series on Galatians. But for today, it's Trinity Sunday, and I get the challenge of preaching on the Trinity. It's kind of the day that all theologians kind of dread while kind of delighting in the opportunity to grapple with the mystery of God's nature. And it's this concept that has developed over centuries and has been the cause of significant debate through church history. One really significant time of debate was way back in the 4th century when there was this huge disagreement in the church. We're going to have a little short history lesson for this. The key people involved were Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria, and Arius, a priest from Libya. And both these men were espousing doctrines that many people held to. And at the surface of the debate was whether Jesus was divine. But underneath that, there was also the issue of what God was like. The debate was really wide-reaching, and Athanasius, for a significant part of his life, was considered a heretic. He was nicknamed the Black Dwarf. This short, dark-skinned Egyptian bishop was exiled 5 times by 4 Roman emperors, and he spent 17 of the 45 years he was bishop in exile. He argued that when one looked at the person of Jesus, we were looking at God, that Jesus was the self-revelation of God, God in human form. Athanasius argued that being self-contained and independent and superior and distant were not the essential features of God. Instead, the defining character of God was self-giving love, which occurs even within the Godhead between the 3 persons of the Trinity. And that self-giving love looks outward and expresses itself in real nearness to others, including us. Arius rejected that idea, arguing that Jesus should be understood as an exemplary human being. His view of God was so far above us humans that the idea of God taking on human form was outrageous. For Arius, the idea of God lowering himself to become personally involved with his creatures was demeaning and even blasphemous. Divinity was too far removed from humanness for Jesus to be God. And this became a common belief over the Roman Empire. Apparently you could hear the Christians singing a catchy song that went, "There was a time when the sun was not. There was a time when the sun was not." Athanasius accused Arius of having a sterile God who sits in isolated splendor, doesn't reveal, and is irrelevant and passionless, whereas the God made known in Jesus is dynamic and involved in relating, revealing, and giving, a God who can know joy and pain, who longs for us to return the love we're given, who hurts when we fail to respond, and grieves when we damage ourselves in the process. The debate went on all over the church and went on for many years. But needless to say, Athanasius won the debate and the doctrine of the Trinity was spelled out. And it's not something you commonly hear being debated in the church anymore. However, that's not to say that perhaps Arianism, as well as other Trinitarian arguments deemed heretical, sneak back in at times as we emphasise God as high and exalted, distant and uninvolved. So I guess it's not that surprising that theologians do get hung up when it comes to talking about the Trinity, or more particularly how not to talk about the Trinity. Through history, various attempts to describe the Trinity have been determined heretical. For example, some have tried to explain the Trinity as being like the sun in the sky, as the star, the light that it produces, and the heat that it produces, which still falls into that heresy of Arianism. It views Jesus and the Holy Spirit as being created by the Father rather than one in nature with him, because the light and heat are created by the star. But there are another couple of classic heresies regarding the Trinity too. You may have heard the Trinity described as being like water, which can exist in 3 different forms, liquid, and then you can change it to vapor, and then you can change it to ice. But that falls into the heresy of modalism. And that says God is not 3 distinct persons, but merely reveals himself in 3 different modes or forms. Modalism says that God can only exist in 1 mode at a time, a bit like Superman, who has to zoom into the phone booth in order to become something else in a different moment. Or the other major heresy is shown in the description of the Trinity being like a three-leafed clover, three leaves on the one plant. That's the heresy of partialism, that each is not distinct persons, but rather each are a part of God. So each is only a third of God, of the whole. Now, the reality is that to understand the Trinity, we're not ultimately able to use any analogies because they all fall down at some point, even if they start to help us to understand the mystery. So they're often quite useful analogies to a point. So for me, these analogies might have their uses, but we need to understand their limitations. And perhaps as we grapple with why they don't suffice, we actually start to get a clearer understanding of the Trinity. God in three, existing in eternity, coexisting in three distinct persons who are co-equal. Now, I find all that discussion really interesting. After all, systematic theology was my choice of subject to major in. But I get that it might not be as much interest to many of you. But that doesn't mean that the concept of the Trinity is not really important for you to grapple with. I get that ultimately there's an element of whatever we discover, there will be underneath it all a deep and profound mystery when we talk about the nature of God. But I also know that if we don't try to grapple with it, we will be the poorer for it. So that's why I looked at the Rublev's icon with the children, because in the icon we're invited into the community of God that already exists around that table. During the week, I heard someone say at our local school that we lack a sense of community. And it's not the first time I've heard this type of comment in different places, that our society in general seems to be losing the ability to act as community, often until something terrible happens, and then we're forced suddenly to open our eyes again to our neighbour. I think somehow we've lost the sense that there is already a table to which we're invited to join. People often ask me why I put so much time into guiding, and my answer takes various forms, but basically it's because through guiding, I'm able to be present at a lot more tables, ultimately in the hope that this table that Jesus hosts will be where I can gather with them. On Trinity Sunday, we remind ourselves as a people of God that God is not some ultimate individualist. Judaism, Islam, classical Greek philosophy all offer that. But Christianity doesn't. In Christianity, we don't have a God who's lofty and utterly self-sufficient or in need of no other company. Our God isn't some Superman-type figure who's the ultimate self-sufficient winner who cannot even reveal his identity to Lois Lane. In the West, we tend to have this understanding that personhood is defined in reference to the individual in isolation. John Zazoulas, one of my favourite authors, the Eastern Orthodox Metropolitan of Pergamum, and one of the most influential Orthodox Christian theologians, argues in his book, Being as Communion, that true identity can only be found in relation, and that only in communion can God be what God is. Think about it for a moment. When you try to describe your own identity, doesn't it ultimately come down to who you are as you are in relationship with others? The nature of who we are is not primarily found in taking ourselves off to a desert island and seeing who we are in some static entity. It's who we are in communion with others. God can rightly be called love because God is only God in communion of the Trinity in which there is love within and outward. Love is not a property of God, it's what happens in the persons of the Trinity. Love is God's mode of existence. And just as love constitutes God's being, so love constitutes our being. That's why I think it's important that we keep talking about the Trinity, even if it's hard to understand and full of mystery, because it has a huge impact on how we see God. We were created so that we and God might relate to one another. God is already relational in God's being as the Trinity, and we're invited to join into that community that already exists. We are created in the image of God, which means we are created for community, community with God and community with one another. And that's why being together is so important, for here we're reminded that we are interdependent. If God was utterly self-contained and professionally distant, like Arius wanted, then we could respond in an uninvolved and individual manner. But the God who's characterised by love and self-giving needs us to learn to love and give and be in community with one another. It's in community we discover God and the passions and conflicts and joys and giving of community life. Christian faith is not ultimately about doctrine, but about experience, about a relationship with a living, passionate God. The people in the church of the 4th century were not making doctrines for doctrine's sake. They were attempting to describe their experience of a living God. And at the end of the day, as much as I'd like you to get excited about the doctrine of the Trinity, what's most important is to be in that living relationship with God. The Trinity explains our experience of God in that it tells us that God is by nature relational. The perfect love relationship is not just a theoretical possibility. It's actually taking place constantly within God. God is not desperately combing the universe in a futile search for someone who can reciprocate the love that God longs to express. God exists as a love relationship. God is love in action, the fullness of love in action. And this love relationship is not a closed relationship. God taking human form showed us that we're invited into it. Deep in the very being of God, there is community, a community which reaches out to include you and me. We don't have an aloof solo performer God. We have a Trinitarian God who shows us that the highest form of existence is communal, that true greatness is found in community rather than self-sufficiency. The church community reflects God far better than any lone individual, no matter how amazing. Individualism is the way of limitation, diminishment, and death. Growth occurs as we give to others and receive from them. The mystery of the mighty God of the cosmos, the mystery of the vulnerable God who walked among us, and the mystery of the God who nudges and whispers within us are all the same mystery, the same God. So we shouldn't get too fixated on one aspect of the experience of God and start suggesting that it proves other images of God are wrong. God will always be bigger, more diverse, more surprising than you can get your head around. The wonderful thing about the Trinity is that it confirms that there is a much bigger reality than we can comprehend. That wisdom was there from the beginning. That in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That God reaches out through history, offering meaning. Certain difficult situations we find ourselves in, though, can cause us to think that there is no meaning, that nothing lasts. Like the words of Macbeth when he heard the news that his wife had died. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day, to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It's a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And I guess that's often people's response to things that are hard, that there's nothing bigger, nothing beyond. But it's not true. God is so much bigger than any situation we find ourselves in. And the Trinity reminds us of that. So be it. Amen. Let's take a moment to reflect.